Hey everybody, it's Operation Tango Romeo, the place where healing happens. If you'd like to support this show, remember, like, comment, subscribe, and share like the sugar bear, because sharing is caring. And we're live for another edition of Operation Tango Romeo, the trauma recovery podcast for veterans, first responders, and their families. Today, a very interesting episode. I hope that you enjoy it. Please remember to participate. Throw your comments in. I can't always get to all the comments because there's a lot of them often, but I will get to and acknowledge the comments in real time as best as I can. A trick for making a comment, if you write me a novel, I won't be able to read any of it. So try to treat it like Twitter and make it short and concise so that I can actually read it quick in real time. Today, I've got a couple of friends of mine that are colleagues with Pure Life Healthcare Management. We are all rowing in the same direction. And we're going to be talking about ayahuasca and an ayahuasca retreat in Peru, which is super cool. I don't think I'm going to be able to make the first one because it's in March, but one after that would be a life experience for sure. Natalie, Cole, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Mark.
You betcha. Tell me about who hit Peru first out of the two of you. Who first had an ayahuasca journey?
We actually ended up both going down together. We went down July 2022 out to Peru. So we spent a whole month at Riosbo, just literally living off the river in the jungle for a month.
For a month. So
yeah.
What drove you down there? I mean, what was the point in time for each of you where you went, yeah, I think I'm going to go hang out in the jungle for a month and try ayahuasca? What was the breaking point?
I've always been very interested in plant medicine. That's why we started like the Herb Clinic, our education center for cannabis. And I've actually wanted to do ayahuasca since I was 18, but always wanted to have a traditional experience with it by going down to Peru. And when I met Natalie in 2019, she had expressed similar interest. So we did a lot of research with different centers. There's lots of ones popping up, especially as popularity of these types of retreats is growing. So doing research to find a good center, which we found through the Ayahuasca Foundation. And then we booked the trip. Both of us had been using cannabis for a long part of our lives. We'd both been microdosing with psilocybin and seen improvement there. So this was just something else to see. They've been using this. It makes up the number one medicine thing in about 90 different tribes throughout South America. So it is something that's been used for a really long time. And just knowing the benefits in other plant medicines, this was kind of the next step for us.
How do you even decide which one's good and which one's bad? It's not like there's going to be Google reviews. Like, how did you pick one?
Going through kind of what the costs are versus what you're kind of getting out of it. The Ayahuasca Foundation is unique because they do research at their centers, and the price per day was manageable. For a month, it was about $6,000 US. There's some retreats that are $10,000 for a week. And just what was included in it, your hotel when you got down there was included, all the transportation, all your food, your meals, your ceremonies, all your other plant medicines that go with it, everything was there. And so we went through about 25 different centers and doing those kind of cost comparisons and experience comparison, and then chose what we felt was best for us.
So like just testimonials on the website, like how did you gauge the experience comparison? Natalie?
Well, I think for myself, it was like the education on the website, like the focus on the healing, not just with ayahuasca, but like all the other plant medicines with research. And I think we were drawn to the Ayahuasca Foundation as well. So like they're the only research facility in the world that are doing this. So like they're doing it as well. So it definitely, we were drawn to that, and it just so happened that while we were there, the founder of their retreat happened to have like one of his staff didn't end up making it. So he ended up on there last minute, and he shared with us that he was working with the Heroic Hearts Foundation down in the U.S.
Yep.
On
that's
providing
Jesse
the
Gould, right?
Yes. Yeah. So he was already linked with Heroic Hearts. And so it just kind of everything fell on our laps that this was a great opportunity that we could also potentially bring veterans down for the research, for the healing, and to like bring this to the forefront on like the healing modalities of plant medicine, ayahuasca, psychedelics in a safe environment and in a very traditional way. So
no, there's a lot more to it than just going on a wild ride and seeing cool geometric shapes and whatever the trip is. I was on a call with Jill Younghusband, and she explained a lot. So was there any parts of the experience for either of you that you could have done without? Because there's and try to break it down, like walk us through all the different things other than going on a wild ayahuasca trip that happened while you're on this trip in Peru. I mean, there's diet, there was so much. I can't even remember half of it. Are you going to do rock, paper, scissors to decide who's going to answer that one?
So the first thing that people need to be aware of is that this isn't a holiday or a vacation. It's not something that's easy. You're not going and just tripping in the jungle. There's a lot of work that goes into it. Just when you arrive in Iquitos, Iquitos is the gateway to the Amazon. It's a boat and plane accessible community, and where a lot of the research, or not research, but ayahuasca centers are based. So just even starting with flying into Iquitos and seeing that city and how people live, you're watching motor cars run past you. You're seeing four or five people on a moped, and just the community that is it, that you're going into is really high paced. And you'll spend a couple days there, and then we go out into the center, and you're completely isolated. You're with the group that you're with. There's no communication with the outside world, and that in its own can be overwhelming for people where it's, you know, you don't have contact, these things, you're just
that's going out. That there. Sounds like it might be one of the best parts, the digital detox.
Yeah. I found healing in just that alone, let alone doing any of the plant medicine or any of the psychedelics. So in the programs that we're running, they're 21 days. In those 21 days, you're going to do 8 ayahuasca ceremonies, and then you have another 13 days that you're in the jungle.
Is that cumulative? Like you might get a bit more kick out of the third or the fifth one than you would out of the first or the second one?
No, every ceremony could be completely different. Your first one, you could get like overwhelmed, like have your biggest breakthrough in your first ceremony, and your third one be mild. You could like it, and every person is different. So there isn't really like
eight ceremonies. You could have 8 very different experiences.
Yes,
you could drink a little or a lot, and your experience that will vary greatly regardless of how much you drink.
Yeah. So the you don't get what you think you want. You get what the plants know you need, and so everything is very very different. So with that, the whole process of everything is cleaning yourself physically, mentally, and spiritually. And there's stuff that goes along with all of those.
Like purging.
Make that happen. So purging is a big one, and something that people look at with ayahuasca. People typically will purge some way during a ceremony, but then there are other treatments that we do as well. So there is a purgative known as Sangre de Grado, which is also referred to as dragon's blood. It's the sap that comes from a tree. It has the highest level of collagen out of any plant living on the planet. And there's multiple uses for it.
So does everybody get big fat lips after?
No. People can use it to heal wounds. It's really good for, like, oral health. And then the way that we typically use it there is as a purgative. So you'll wake up one morning and they'll give you a big glass of this that's mixed with hot water. You'll drink it, and then you let it sit in your stomach for 5 to 10 minutes, and then you drink warm water until you puke 4 or 5 times, and everything's coming out clear. And essentially, it's like scrubbing the top part of your GI tract. There's lots of association with gut biome health, with things like depression and asthma, like a number of illnesses that are tied to gut biome. And so this is kind of essentially to reset that. While you're in the jungle, you're eating an incredibly healthy diet. Everything is just vegetables and eggs and occasionally fish or chicken. There's no salt, no sugar, no red meat, no alcohol.
Python?
No oil.
No python, no. So everything is very, very clean, and part of that is keeping that. So purgatives are one thing to help clean your system out. Another thing that they use there is a lot of steam baths. So they'll combine different medicinal plants into a pot and boil it, and then you'll sit on like a little bench and have a tarp put over top of you and steam. So that's like cleansing out your system. We also use a plant called Makura, which they make into a poultice, and then they take the liquid from that, and they'll put the liquid up your nose. It's kind of like a ginger wasabi kind of thing, and you inhale it back and clean out your sinuses.
Yeah, that'd do it.
Yeah.
It sounds like one of the challenges on Jackass. Yeah. Just throw some hot sauce in your eyes.
There's a second sinus cleanse called Sachimango that actually helps clean out the respiratory tract. So not even just cleaning out your sinuses, you'll start to like cough up phlegm or tar or things that you might have built up from pollution, smoke, any of those kinds of things. That one's a lot rougher. We use a plant called Shirak Sinango, which is known for being a nervous system cleanse. It's an alcohol extract with the bark of the plant. And so you do basically like a little shot first thing in the morning, and it'll make your entire body vibrate, and it helps clear any nervous system blockages that you have. So your body basically vibrates for like 4 or 5 hours, and then you get extremely tired because you put your body through a giant workout, and then you'll sleep for the afternoon.
One of the questions I get when I cover psychedelics a fair bit. I try to talk to everybody as much as I can. People with ketamine clinics, integrated ketamine clinics. So they integrate that with psychotherapy, and they do it not like just one shot. It's like a whole system that goes on for weeks. One of the questions that I sometimes get, and I always forget to ask, is the dangers. So, 'cause I never hear that side. Are there dangers of like a psychotic break? Can permanent damage be done? Like what's the potential downside of these ayahuasca retreats other than getting bit by a snake?
With ayahuasca, there are some, like there's criteria that we screen people for before they're going down there. And usually before somebody does ayahuasca, if they have some preliminary conditions, like psychosis or bipolar, the shamans, they call them curanderos in our tradition, will usually spend more time cleansing before somebody is able to do ayahuasca. And it's why it's important to choose a proper retreat center that's going to do these types of screenings. Things like SSRIs are a direct contraindication with ayahuasca. Your ayahuasca will like raise your serotonin levels as well as the SSRIs, and somebody could actually end up with serotonin poisoning, which is lethal. So making sure that people are off medications and and properly screened before they come on to the retreats is crucial. If somebody isn't sending you a medical screening when you're looking at going to an ayahuasca center, just that's definitely a red flag that they're not doing what they need to be doing.
Natalie, have you ever heard of anybody dying because of an ayahuasca ceremony?
There has been, but like, it's very rare. But I know the one in particular had pre-existing medical conditions, and their brew consisted of additional things which weren't like traditional. And so, but like, other than that, no, like, it's not something like you would hear more, I guess, about it.
What about psychotic breaks? Has there ever been like a psychotic break that lasted for a great long time? Anybody end up institutionalized after?
Not that I'm aware of. I've seen it in ceremony, though, where people have had a really hard experience where something very, very traumatic has came up during the ceremony, where the person is very uncomfortable and didn't want to be a part of it, didn't really want to be there anymore. And it's about having the proper support structure while you're there as well, too. Like, we do sharing circles after every second ceremony where the entire group talks about their experiences, how they're doing. We have facilitators that are there that are very familiar with the medicine and these types of things. And then with our research team, we usually actually have a psychiatrist or a psychologist that are there, part of the research group. That are there to help support on that aspect as well, too. And it's one of the importances of doing it in a traditional setting and doing it with somebody that's good, is because if you do, like, you know, you have a buddy that's like, hey, I got some ayahuasca, do you want to come do some in my basement? And you end up opening essentially a can of worms inside of yourself, but they don't have the tools to be able to help you navigate and work through, that can...
You're breaking up on us there, Cole. Natalie, one of the questions that I have is that you hear about people like Will Smith in his book that came out, and dude's done ayahuasca, like, I forget the number, like really high number, like 60 times or something like that. So my question is, if it's such an effective healing modality, why do you got to go back 50, 60 times? And you guys have both gone like a lot, right? You add it all up, you've had a lot of ayahuasca experiences. So like, why do people need to keep going back so much if it's healing?
Well, it's not necessarily that it, like, I go back by choice because there's parts of me that still need healing. It's not a great fix in the sense that, you know, you'll walk away completely healed. You'll walk away understanding of where your healing needs to, like, the direction you need to go. Like, it prepares you to be a better person and to live a healthier life. Like, the best thing I ever heard was that.
I'm getting feedback. Cole, let's do this. When one person's speaking, yeah, you're ahead of me. Let's see if that fixes it. All right. I'm sorry, Natalie. Keep going.
No, that's okay. But ayahuasca will show you the gap between the person you are and the person you think you are. So, like, there's some tremendous healing in that. And so, like, for myself, after the first retreat, the parts of my life that I experienced, like, a decent amount of anxiety, like, where, you know, I'd lose all blood and feel it in my legs and arms, like, that is completely gone. Being able to speak, like, on a platform like this, where I get to share my story, is something that would cause me huge anxiety. So I go back because I know there's still areas that I can heal. And I also, like, for me, we went back just this past September, and, like, being part of other people's healing and allowing this to be something that we get to share with the world is part of why I go back. But I think for the general rule, it's not necessary, or some people may or may not be called to go back and do more plant medicine, but it's just... for personal growth, personal healing, but not because I need a top up or anything.
Do you know of people that at the Sharing Circle, they say that they spoke with God or Christ?
Oh, well, like some have spoken to ayahuasca. I spent some time with ayahuasca in just a different reality.
An entity that identifies it or presents itself as I am ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but to one, she was a tree. To another, it was a mountain or everybody experienced. Like for me, it was this very geometrical, very 3D shape that I was entwined in. But I knew who she was. I knew I was with her. And that was part of my intention going into the ceremony, because I had had some struggles in some of my ceremonies. And I was just like, I don't want to struggle this time. I just want to sit with you. And there were some profound moments where I saw where my struggles stem from, when it comes to my serving in the military. And they were it's like a download of information that I can't define in words, but it just a complete understanding. Similar to when people have a near-death experience, they get this download of their life. I had several moments, and for me it was more knowledge-based, whereas other people were very visual.
With psilocybin, and I've heard it with ayahuasca, with some journeys as well, I've had the geometric shapes, which are just, it makes me think that it really is consciousness expanding and not a hallucination, because I don't think I'm that smart. I don't believe that my brain can possibly come up with the geometric complexity that I have seen. There's no words for it. We're talking about 3D and then some with unbelievable complexity and intricacy, and all at the same time as it's moving. I have experienced with psilocybin, and I'm just, I sit there in wonder looking at these moving, morphing shapes, and I think, I'm not this smart. My brain cannot cook this up. This is not imagination. It couldn't be. The only thing that makes sense to me is that my awareness is expanded to see this reality that I can't see otherwise. What do you guys think? Do you think it's you're experiencing hallucinations, or do you think you're actually shifting consciousness, being awareness, awareness of other dimensions? Do you believe that when you're speaking with Mother Aya, I've heard her called, that this is an actual sentient being that you're communing with? Cole, what do you think?
I do believe that you're expanding consciousness and that you are speaking with the plants. These are all sentient beings. They've been around for a long time. They know things of they've seen the world as they've grown, as they've been connected. They've passed it on to trees and plants that are younger than them. It is a living consciousness, and it is the same thing. I'm not that stuff that I've gone through in ceremony are thoughts that haven't even plugged into my head, or the way that I react in situations, and it can tie that back to single events in my childhood that I'm able to see. I had a ceremony where I saw every single time that I've lost my temper in my entire life.
Wow.
All in a 3-hour span, and what led up to that and how it affected the people that I lost my temper on, and came out of it knowing that, anger is never a good way to react in any situation. And I've removed part of that from myself. There's it's the help of those plants while you're there. You're not just connected with ayahuasca, you're connected with the entire jungle around you, with these master plants that grow in the jungle that all have different personalities and abilities to be able to help you in your journey.
How is this effect? How have you seen it affect Faith? Because you guys have done Peru more than once, and so you've interacted with a lot of people. What I think is fascinating are the hardcore atheists that are no longer hardcore atheists after an ayahuasca journey. Have you seen that?
In my retreat in May, the guy laying next to me on my mat was a full atheist before he there, and he saw his version of God while we were in ceremony and realized that there is a higher power. It's maybe not anything traditional that he grew up with or anything that, but, you know, you become atheist to agnostic pretty quick, realizing that there's these energies and stuff that are surrounding us that are infinitely knowledgeable.
What about the other way around? Somebody that is very devout in a particular faith, after the ayahuasca journey, they look at their, like, how have you seen that affect a person's devout faith in either Christianity, Judaism, Islam, whatever?
Well, I think for, like, it's not something that, like, when you're there, like, most people don't even know what people do for a living, whether they're retired or working. Like, someone's religion doesn't even really come into play. It's more that spiritual connection. And the interesting thing with ayahuasca is your ability to understand energy and connection is like, I can't even describe it. Like, when you're in ceremony, you're in your own little world, but at the same time, you feel the connection of everybody around you and the support and the, and like, even outside of ceremony, like, what I noticed, because our first retreat was a month-long retreat with civilians from around the world. And then this retreat was all veterans, and the peer support.
Is that one with Kelsey Sharon was there then?
No, we actually ran into Kelsey Sharon on the flight back from our first Peru trip. She turned around and I had a sweater with U.S. military, and she's like, "Oh, are you military?" And I was like, "Oh my God." So yeah. And so we met her quite some time, and she had brought up her old cards. So
she's good, yeah. People.
She is. Absolutely. So yeah, but just like, when it comes to like someone's, like, I find there's a difference between spirituality and religion, and it's just not even something that is a subject while people are there.
At the sharing circles, people must have. So here's what I've observed. I'm pretty much hooked on NDE videos. So for those that don't know, NDE are near-death experience videos. So people that were pronounced dead, and they go to the other side, similar in many ways to psychedelic experiences, actually get to meet other beings, and then they say, "Hey, it's not your time yet," and they go back. Things like Cole talking about sounds a lot like a life review, where you go and you see the impact of every little interaction, and you're like, "Oh," and then you feel that interaction through the other person's eyes. So the ultimate in empathy, like really walking a mile in another person's shoes. So you experience your actions from the person that was receiving those actions, from their perspective. And that's the life review that so many people go through with these NDEs. And one of the things I've struggled with on this show and with my audience is trying to explain that post-traumatic stress injuries are injuries of disconnection. And explaining what that actually means, I find myself tongue-tied. So I'm going to try it again and tie it into what we're talking about. And then hopefully Natalie and Cole can put a finer point on it than I'm able to articulate. So the disconnection from a traumatic injury disconnects you from your life. It disconnects you from the person that you were, the person that you want to be. It disconnects you in relationships. By isolating you, you're not able to connect with others, with your loved ones, because there's walls that are put up that create this disconnection due to the trauma and injury. They disconnect you from society because you're often urged, or you have a yearning to isolate. You just can't people. I can't be peopling today. There's too many people. And so that isolation starts to a negative feedback loop, which increases the disconnection. Isolation and disconnection. So it feeds itself. And this, of course, goes all the way to suicide, where people feel so alone that that nobody loves them and they don't matter and I have no place in this world anyway and nobody's going to miss me. And then they die. They die by suicide. So if disconnection is the injury, clearly the antidote is connection. And this is what I hear with all the psychedelics, connection. And connection is the healing. The healing is connection. I see this with, I learned through Jessica Vanderhook doing equine assisted therapy, understanding your own personal energy and how it affects those around you, because you can see it in real time with the horses and how sensitive it is. Like that dial, like you have to have a hair trigger on your energy because you see it amplified 10x on these horses. And then you can feel yourself throttling up and throttling down. And you see it, the physical manifestation on that, just like it's a energy meter in front of you. You see it by the reaction of the horses. And these psychedelic experiences help you understand that as well. So that's my spiel as best as I can with my tiny little brain on connection and healing and disconnection and being unhealthy because of the disconnection. Who wants to tackle it? Rock, paper, scissors, Natalie or Cole? Unmute yourself. There you go.
So with connection and with ayahuasca as well, is the way that they talk about it is that we have this infinite source of light and power and connection to the universe that is above us with these lines that connect us to it. And when you have a traumatizing experience or you have something, it ties these lines up, it knots them, it tangles them. And when people come to Peru to do this and the curandero or curandera does a initial assessment of people, they can see those lines coming from you, connecting you to the universe.
They can see the shamans can see these things.
They
psychically
can see these energetic, like that's what their training comes from. And that's how they wow. work, especially the Shipibo people. They call it like a very fine, delicate surgery where during your experiences, they're going in and they're re-straightening these lines. And so depending on how many of these things are tangled and stuff like that, like when you talk about going back down, you know, in a week or three ceremonies, they might be able to help you straighten 50% of your lines where you now have a way better connection to yourself, your higher being, the universe. And then you go down and they continue to work on other lines. And the tools that you're given and the understanding that you have in yourself helps you to be able to straighten these lines out. And with ayahuasca, with any type of psychedelic, with any type of therapy, that part is only 20%. It's the integration that makes up the other 80% of that. You can learn these lessons.
I've heard this term many times and I don't understand it. What does integration mean?
Integration means taking the lessons and the tools that you learn while you're down there and being able to implement them back into your life. It's easy for somebody to be able to eat really healthy, take time to do things that make their heart sing, do different stuff, relax, connect to yourself. When you're in the jungle by yourself with no distractions for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
When you come back home and you come back into reality and you have kids, family, a job, all your exterior stresses, it's hard to remember to remind yourself to do these things. And one thing for me being, you know, an entrepreneur for the last 7 years is that I would always wake up and feel overwhelmed and like obligated that I needed to wake up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning and be on the computer a half an hour later and working and sitting there for 12 hours. And I take time in the morning. Like when I was in the jungle, I would journal every day. I would sit and sew. I would take time for myself and do things that make me happy. And so I start my day now that I'm home doing those things, because if I start my day out happy, it makes the rest of my day go by easy.
The morning is the rudder of the day, I've heard it said, and it's true.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons, and it's funny, people mock what they don't understand. And I hear Jordan Peterson's make your damn bed getting mocked all the time. But you mock what you don't understand. One of my mantras on this show is make your damn bed, because the morning is the rudder of the day. So taking control of your day, and it's a bit of self-care, it's self-love. Well, nobody sees it. You saw it, which means your brain is keeping track of it all day long. It's like a little boat anchor. And so you make your bed first thing, which means you've taken control of your life, of your surroundings, of your environment. It's the first thing that you did. And that sets your day in the right direction. And if you don't believe me, make your bed for 30 days in a row and then don't. See what happens. It matters. I heard when he was alive, the 6 minutes to success. What was this? Anyway, one of the big gurus, his name will come to me because I got a great memory. That's what you got to tell yourself so it comes back. But somebody came to him and said, Bob Proctor. See, I knew it would come back. And somebody came to him and says, hey, Bob, I'm just feel so stuck in life. So stuck. You got a garage? Yeah. Is it a mess? Yeah. Go clean it. What? Mr. Guru guy, this is the advice you're giving me? What the hell you're talking about? He goes, listen, don't talk to me until you clean your garage. Clean your garage, then come talk to me. And then we'll go from there. Okay, weirdo. So he did it. He goes and cleans his garage, organizes all of his tools, gets rid of the filth and organizes everything and makes it meticulous. And then he was feeling better. Because your brain is actually keeping track of everything in the mess. So it still knows where everything is, which means it's like having a bunch of apps open on your phone. So close all those apps by organizing. Then your brain doesn't have to keep track. You know that everything is in its place, so you don't have to think about it. Your brain doesn't track it anymore. It reduces stress levels. And of course you feel stuck if you're in overwhelm. If you can't think about the next thing, or you can't plan ahead, well, it's because you're in overwhelm. Your brain's keeping track of too much. So clean up, get everything organized so your brain isn't keeping track of every little piece of paper and tool and piece of makeup or whatever it is, you know. I don't even know why I started going on that. Natalie, your turn. What are your thoughts?
No, I just thought I'd share, because we get a lot of questions on, like, you know, what an ayahuasca ceremony is like, or an experience kind of thing. And like going into ceremony, and you're essentially doing ceremonies Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You show up, you have your little space, and then you set your intention. And so, like, what you want to learn or what you want to see or what you want to focus on. And so my first time in Peru was more to focus on myself and my traumas. And so I went in with just the blanket statement is I want to deal with my traumas. And so, like, the whole geometric shape part comes into play. And then you essentially go in and out of consciousness. And but you're typically aware of it in most cases. And so I ended up in a space where I saw myself as a teenager, and the trauma, like, it was a trauma to me at the time. But in a flash, in a download, I learned and understood how that one trauma affected my entire life up until now. And where it's kind of caused me problems in my life. And then I zoom back to, like, that same space, that same situation. And then I got a download of everybody who was involved and their thought process, their intentions. And I realized in that moment how, like, it was, you know, I was a teenager. I, like, dealt with anxiety, depression, and certain aspects of my life that I just saw the situation in a certain way, and it was at that moment when I had that, like, aha, like, oh my God, that's, you know, this is my lesson. And then I purged, and that's where, like, people talk about the puking part, and it is uncomfortable, but there was, like, this stream of, like, I was puking, but it was coming from my heart. and it was that weird, like the weirdest feeling in the world. So you're half conscious and aware, but at the same time, you're like your understanding of, or your brain's ability to understand things just goes through the roof.
What are some of the more surprising lessons that stuck with you because of the ayahuasca journeys?
For me, the biggest lesson was understanding ego. I came out of one ceremony, and I was just, it totally knocked me off, any type of, healing. That was my feeling. And I realized, for me, ego isn't always just that person who thinks they're, they're better than everybody. And because that's what most people refer to when they're talking ego. Mm-hmm. But ego is also that part of you that tells you you're not good enough.
Sure.
That, and that was the form of ego that I tend to lean to. And so it was a lesson for me, just understanding that my ego is a part of me. It holds a purpose, but it's not, it can't be the dominating feature of my life. I need to be in control of my ego as well. So.
What do you guys think of Eckhart Tolle's way of framing ego? I personally like it. Have either of you read any of his books, like A New Earth or whatever the other one is?
Yes, I have, but you can.
The Power of Now. That's the other one.
Yes.
Well, Cole, if you haven't, I definitely recommend them. But basically, Eckhart, he frames ego like a demon. And it's that voice whispering in your ear with a false story. So, and the story is, like Natalie was saying, either you're way better than you think you are, or you're way less than you think you are. But either way, it's just a bullshit story, because you are not the truck you drive or the house you live in or the Armani suit that you're wearing or the Gucci bag that you're carrying. You are none of those things. None of those things have anything to do with you. They don't make you better. They don't make you worse. They don't make you important. They don't make you interesting. None of those things are true. The only thing that is true is how you treat yourself and how you treat others, and that's it. That's who you are. And Cole, you have some thoughts on this line of chatting and ego?
Yeah, it is who you are, how you treat people. I feel like Natalie had said, some ego is something that can discourage you. It's something that can make you feel more confident, but it's also something that you can train. There are instances when you need to feel more confident that you need to pull on that ego to make yourself feel confident and talk in an uncomfortable situation. There's it's something that you can use for you, and you need to control your ego. You don't need to let your ego control you.
Exactly. Yeah, it's something that you need to have a leash on. And one of the gifts of all the psychedelics, it always comes back to ego. It's what I keep hearing, and I've experienced it as well. But that false sense of self, it just gets slapped right in your face. And the more you're trying to hang on to ego, the harder it slaps you in the face or kicks you in the backside. Ibogaine is one that I've heard of, but neither of you have tried Ibogaine. Is that correct? Yeah, you haven't tried it yet. One versus another. So I know it's tough to comment on because you haven't tried Ibogaine. From the conversations I've had, that is one of the more ego-crushing psychedelics that you could take. It's one of the more powerful ones. It's also a more wicked ride as a result, but ayahuasca versus ibogaine versus psilocybin, could you guys sort of parse that out and the difference between the different from your experiences and from what you've heard? Cole, Natalie?
I think that everything kind of has its place and its purpose and its own ability to be a tool for healing depending what you're going through. Psilocybin is something that can be used in a minute dose. It can be used in a macro dose. And from the teachers that we've had down in Peru, they've told us too that if you can't get ayahuasca, the next closest thing is mushrooms. So those two things kind of work together, more the macro dosing of psilocybin as comparative to ayahuasca. But and then there's been really, really good anecdotal evidence for sure with ibogaine, particularly with addiction.
Isn't DMT the active ingredient in both ayahuasca and ibogaine?
Yeah, it's the main one in ayahuasca. Ibogaine is a partial ingredient in it as well. It does have another major component.
So with ayahuasca, is it NN DMT or is it like 5-MeO DMT that you find in ayahuasca, or do you know?
So it would be the NN. 5-MeO is more exclusively from its one source. What makes ayahuasca different than just to NN-DMT is NN-DMT is more of an inhalable. Ayahuasca is a combination of ayahuasca vine and chacruna. Chacruna has the majority of the DMT component to it. Ayahuasca vine has harmaline and harmalol, which are not psychoactive, but they help DMT become orally available, as well as longer lasting in our system. It's why an ayahuasca ceremony lasts 4 to 5 hours, versus if you're to inhale DMT, it's about 10 to 15 minutes. So it's just like a more gradual approach to that and just how it lasts in our body.
And psilocybin's different, right? Because I don't think DMT is in psilocybin. It's a different pathway. Yeah,
it is, yeah.
I like psilocybin. Especially the golden teachers are my personal favorite. I find they all have a different frequency, and some frequencies like me and the other ones don't seem to like me, but the golden teachers seem to like me. And I know if you've never taken it, that's going to make zero sense. It's going to sound like gobbledygook, but I can tell you that's been my experience for sure. So guys, tell me about the work that you do and how it relates to Pure Life Health Management. Natalie?
So Pure Life Health Management, our goal is to support veterans, first responders, their families, our communities, collaborate with community, and treating our patients not just in a medical way, but a socioeconomic, all those other factors that help in one's healing. So we have the clinic here in Fort Saskatchewan that has a specific program special to veterans and their families to help them navigate veterans affairs, navigate community resources, and help improve their quality of life. And so we also work with Onaya Science, which is an international research organization out of the UK that's the entire research with our combat veterans right now is being sanctioned through the University of Melbourne. And so we're bringing a group of 10 to 12 veterans 2-3 times a year to Peru to do the research, bring the healing, bring it back to Canada so that there's better understanding, reducing the stigma of psychedelics and this modality of healing, and to be able to bring the research and data to the forefront of showing the efficacy of plant medicine and the potential healing power to the world.
The stigma is fascinating to me. Some of the posts I've made on LinkedIn, you get the response from the stigma people that they don't know, but they're causing more harm than good by sharing their comments. And it's all about labels. So they will refer to psychedelics as illicit drugs as opposed to plant medicine. And it's like, well, what's the difference between medicine and a drug? What's the difference? It's the label. That's it and how it works. And I find it very unfortunate and difficult. Has there been a way, like, have you experienced that as well? Oh, it's illicit drugs. You just want to get blasted out of your mind. It's like, well, okay. So you're going to compare it to crystal meth. What if crystal meth can be used clinically? What if it can, like, so it's a street drug. Okay. But what if it can be used clinically and help people? Why is it now bad? Well, it's crack. Okay. Let's say it's crack. If it can be used clinically and if it can help people, what's wrong with it? Thoughts on that? Cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of pharmaceuticals that we have that were originally derived from plants. Plants have been here long before we got here, and they'll be here long after we're gone. And from that, like, when cannabis was first being legalized, they put out an article relating cannabis to heroin, and, like, why was it okay if somebody does this, and why is it okay if somebody does that? But when you look at these things and you look at them in like a cultural context, like you take cocaine, for instance, cocaine is, you know, looked at as a very horrible thing. And like it has, you know, destroyed some people's lives and addiction and whatever. But you look at the base ingredient of that, which is the coca leaf. And you look at like the native tribes that live in the Andes Mountains in Chile, and they use it to help with altitude sickness. Because it helps there, and they chew on the leaves. When you're in Peru, you can buy coca tea in a regular tea bag in a box in the supermarket. And here we have a huge issue with those things. When you look at like heroin or opium, you look back at historical and ancient uses of it, they were used as pain things. They were used to like. They were used medically. You look at the pharmacopoeia in Canada, like prior to pharmaceutical industries, you look at the late 1800s, cannabis made up 70% of the pharmacopoeia in North America. And then we have this stigmatization of them where they don't belong there, but they were there first. And the hardest thing with this stigma and where most of it comes from is that if we're able to grow our own medicines, what need is there for a pharmaceutical industry that's making billions of dollars? That's where the stigma is coming from.
Yeah, there's a question in the comments about is it addictive, and I'll tackle that one, and then to get you guys to put a fine point on it. So, to answer, is it addictive? There is a study done about soldiers in Vietnam and heroin. And some got addicted and some did not. As soon as the war was over, that was it. They just quit. There was no tie to it at all. And people talk about cannabis being a gateway drug. Trauma is the gateway drug, if that all makes sense. So what addiction is you experience relief. You go, oh, that's really good. And so you keep going back to that. And if your life sucks, and the only release from that is whatever drug, name the drug, it doesn't matter what it is, you're going to keep going back to that. Whatever gives you that release from the terrible circumstance. And sometimes that terrible circumstance is external. Sometimes it's internal. It's the voices in your head. It's the anxiety. It's the constant flashbacks to trauma. It's PTSD symptoms. It's anxiety. Whatever it is, it's the relief that you don't want to let go of. That's the addiction. So regardless of the substance, whether it's crack cocaine or whatever it is, it's just the relief that you don't want to let go of. That's what it is. So if you heal the trauma, there's nothing to escape from. If you heal the trauma, there's nothing to be addicted to. Now, as far as a chemical addiction is concerned, the answer to psilocybin is no, it's not addictive. Now, I believe that's the same with ayahuasca, that there's no chemical addiction to ayahuasca. Is that true?
Yeah, there's no chemical addiction to it. And when we had got back from the veteran retreat, Somebody had put in a comment about like, oh, this is great. You guys are just taking down and getting people addicted to something. If you're somebody that has drank ayahuasca, it does not taste great. It is made up of plants and bark and stuff that is boiled down together. And the experiences that you can go through, we asked our entire group, like, hey, do you guys, you know, just want to recreationally use ayahuasca? And the answer is no. Every time.
Yeah, no thanks.
You're doing that for purpose and with intention. You're not just like, hey, it's Friday night. You guys want to come over and drink some ayahuasca? Like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That feeling is not going to be there for anybody.
So, yeah. Well, why Peru? Why can't we do this in Fort Saskatchewan or Camrose? Like, why do you got to go to Peru to do something like this?
So the legality of it, number one, is a big one. It's been used by the tribes down there for a really, really long time, and in Canada, we don't have the ability. I mean, there are people that are offering these kinds of things, kind of like what I had said about a basement scenario. I've done a couple ayahuasca ceremonies in Canada, and I can say that there's nothing like being surrounded in the jungle and surrounded by the plants that you're using for your healing. There's just a different energy while you're there than anything that you're going to be able to get being here and being disassociated from the jungle.
Natalie, we're going to wrap up. Any final thoughts?
No. We are bringing down our next group down March 1st to the 20th. So if anybody's interested, you can go to our website on the Herb Clinic under Ayahuasca Retreats.
So what's the website address?
Theherbclinics.ca.
Theherbclinics, plural, .ca.
Yes, theherbclinics.ca. So we've got information for veteran support, the clinic, cannabis. And also if there are organizations out there that are willing to support veterans to help reduce the financial barriers of making it down there, we are fundraising for that as well. So shout out for that.
All right. Now, if you want to either participate or support this incredibly important venture, please do theherbclinics.ca, or who else could they get a hold of? Or is that it? Or if somebody wants to donate?
Yeah, all the information is on our website under the Ayahuasca Retreats.
Alrighty.
Yeah, there's a link to a corporate sponsorship package as well as our GoFundMe page, and my email is on there if anybody wants any more discussion, information about the programs, they can contact myself.
All right. Well, thank you both. I think we covered a lot of ground on this one, and hopefully we covered all the big FAQs, and thank you to everybody that participated through something in the comments. And as always, share like the sugar bear, because sharing is caring. Hey everybody, it's Operation Tango Romeo, the place where healing happens. If you'd like to support this show, remember, like, comment, subscribe, and share like the sugar bear, because sharing is caring.